Broadcasting Service.
Saturday Night Theater. Present Ronald Howard and Trader Faulkner in Round the Bend, Stephen Grenfell's adaptation of the novel by Neville Shute. Round the Bend.
Lights out.
How do you know, Tom?
Well, I don't really. I'm just guessing.
Oh.
It's exactly 10:15, and I don't suppose much happens in the army after this time of night.
Suppose not. Seems silly, doesn't it? Having a bugler telling the soldiers to put all the lights out in the middle of a war. I mean, when all those ships are so blacked out, you can only guess where they are.
There'll be plenty of lights on board, Beryl.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Those great ships there in Southampton water, with all those soldiers and airmen on board. Where do you imagine they'll be sending them?
How should I know, Beryl? Winston Churchill doesn't ring me up for advice, you know, every time he wants to send a division of troops abroad.
Do you suppose any of them will be going to Egypt?
Very probably.
When you go there, will you go by ship?
How do I know? When the time comes, somebody will just send for me and say, this is it, and I'll be told if I'm to go by ship or in an aircraft flying out to Egypt.
I hope it's by aircraft.
So do I.
Tom?
Hmm?
You love aircraft, don't you?
You know I do. Well, you do too, surely.
Oh, because I work for an aircraft company. No, of course I don't. Not love them the way you do. I mean, I'm only a filing clerk. I could be that in any business firm. It's different for you.
Oh?
I remember the day you joined the company. It was almost exactly 8 years ago, in September 1935.
You remember that?
Of course I do.
Well, I never.
I knew that very first day your first love would always be aeroplanes. You had a sort of starry look about you.
You must be psychic or something.
A girl doesn't have to be psychic to see what it is a man really loves. Tom, how did you first come to be mixed up with aeroplanes?
Didn't I ever tell you?
If you had, I wouldn't be asking now, would I?
Well, in the summer of 32, Sir Alan Cobham came down here to Southampton with his flying circus. I knew from the very first day I saw him stunting in a lincock that I simply had to get a job with that circus.
And you did?
Eventually.
What sort of job?
Oh, general dog's body to start with.
Mm.
Then I sort of wangled myself into the Gretna Green display.
What on earth was that?
It was an elopement.
What?
I had to dress up as a girl, and the chap I was eloping with to Gretna Green, he and I tried to get away in a terrible old T-model form, and Father chased us all over the aerodrome in a tiger moth.
Father?
One of Sir Alan's pilots.
Oh.
He chased us all over the place, bombing us with little bags of flour and toilet rolls. All the crowd used to love it. Ah, so did we.
Who was your intended?
You mean in the car?
Yeah.
Connie Shacklin used to drive the Model T.
What a strange name for a boy.
Well, Connie was short for Constantine.
Oh.
Yes, it wasn't only his name that was strange. He was a strange chap altogether.
In what way?
Well, he was a cheerful enough chap. About my own age. A bit older, maybe. With straight black hair. But, well, he looked like a chink.
Uh-huh.
You know, he was yellow-skinned, and his eyes were different.
Was he really was he really Chinese?
Blowed if I know, really. I remember I asked him once if he was Church of England or Presbyterian or what.
And what did he say?
He said, damned if I know. Then he told me he was born in Penang, that his father was a Buddhist, but that he himself had been Church of England at school.
What about his mother?
That day he said to me, Mother brought us to England when Father died. She was born in Irkutsk, so she's Greek Orthodox.
What a funny mixture.
Well, it seems his mother married again. He told me she was in a place in California called San Diego with his sister. Well, when I left the circus, he was going to join them there in the States. He's going to try and get a job in one of those big aircraft factories they've got in California.
Do you still keep in touch with him?
We swore we'd write, you know, but somehow we never did.
Tom?
Hmm?
When you go out to our repair branch in Egypt, you'll write to me, won't you?
Of course I will. You know that.
Have you really got to go?
You don't get much choice these days. After all, there is a war on.
Oh, this blasted war. I thought we were going to get married around Christmas time. That's what you said.
Yes, I know, love. Look, what say we get married now?
Oh.
Before I go.
Oh, Tom, do you really want us to get married?
Do I want to? Here, let me show you. My darling Beryl, it's only 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I really should be working. But I especially wanted to write to you today, because today I've been out here exactly 2 years. All letters, you see, have to be on the census desk by 5 o'clock. That's why I'm pinching an hour of the firm's time. I haven't had a letter from you for nearly a month now. I just can't understand it, as you usually write every week. It could be, of course, that a couple of ships with your letters on board have been sunk in the Med. I really have liked my job out here. As you know, we operate a large number of aircraft in this theater, and I'm responsible for keeping them in the air. All except engine overhauls, that is. I fly a great deal, and I really feel I'm doing a worthwhile job of work out here. I get on very well with what most people here call the WOGs. I now know a bit about Syrian, Iraqi, and Egyptian aircraft hands. It's no use at all saying, as some people out here are apt to, that these chaps are a lot of monkeys who have dropped out of the trees and that they aren't reliable. They're reliable, and you can use them all right if you take the trouble to learn about them. And if you do that, you'll find the work is liable to come out a good deal cheaper, because their wages are much less. When I say I like it out here, doesn't mean I'm not longing to get back home. I am. Now that the Japs have packed it up in the Far East, we'll be sweating on the top line to see who'll be sent home first. As far as I can see, I've got quite a good chance. I've been out here longer than most of the lads, and the boss has been dropping a few hints recently. Whenever it is, it can't be too soon for me. I want to get back to England so that we can set up our own home and start living our life together. Come in.
Well, the mail's just arrived, Tom.
About ready time, too.
There was a letter for you, so I thought I'd bring it along.
Ah, it's from my wife, is it?
Well, it's not her writing.
Here, let's have a deco. Ah, that's funny.
Oh, what's up?
It's not from Beryl. It's from her father.
Oh, well, I hope everything's all right.
So do I.
Well, I'll push off. I'm up to my eyes in it this afternoon.
Something's up, I know it. Dear Tom, we've been having trouble here, I'm sorry to say. And Beryl wants me to write...
To write and tell you before she writes herself. And her ma and I think that that's best too. As you can imagine, it's been very dull for our Beryl since you went away. And she went up to London some time ago and got in with some Polish officers in the West End. Well, she took to going about with one of them, a certain Captain Wysock. And the long and the short of it is, Tom, she's going to have a baby in January. I know this will be a great blow to you, Tom. I can't tell you how sorry we all are. Captain Wysock came down for a long talk, and he really was heartbroken about you. Even so, when we'd all talked it over, we thought it would be best if there was a divorce and he married Beryl. Captain Weissock's father is a Polish count. They've got big estates in a place called Jabinka. It's near Warsaw. Beryl wants me to say she sends her love, and we all send our sympathy in what must be a terrible shock for you. But I'm sure it will all be for the best.
Your affectionate father-in-law, Albert Cousins. Tom Cutter.
Oh, Tom? Bill here?
Yes?
Tom, Jackson's breathing down my neck.
Oh?
He wants to know if you can guarantee that repeat will be ready for tomorrow morning's flight to Khartoum.
What's the trouble?
Well, he needs a right-hand contact breaker, and the stores have only got left-hand ones.
Then we'll have to get one somewhere else.
Well, that's just it. I've been telephoning all over the ruddy place. As far as I can see, there just isn't a right-hand contact breaker in Cairo.
Well, somebody must have one.
Well, you tell me who he is, then.
I'm coming out. Tell Jackson the repeat will be ready to fly at 0800 hours.
Say so.
I do say so.
Well, then that letter did contain bad news, Tom.
Why do you say that?
Not because of the way you're behaving.
It so happens it contained nothing but ordinary mundane news of day-to-day family affairs. Now, Bill, get cracking on that contact breaker.
Roger.
Oh, God. It's you, Tom.
What is it, Mrs. Cousins? What's happened?
Oh, God.
Where's Beryl? Isn't she in?
You didn't get my letter.
I got a letter from your husband telling me about Beryl and this so-called Polish cunt.
Oh, no, no, not that letter. Come in, Tom. Oh, I wish Father were here to tell you.
Tell me what?
It's Beryl. She did it in the middle of the night when we was all asleep. I was in the kitchen. You can still smell the gas.
I'm back, Ma.
My boy. Father, it's Tom.
Hello, Tom, lad.
Oh, Tom. Tom.
Oh, you mustn't cry, Ma. War's over. I'm back in one piece.
Oh, it's good to see you, son.
He's looking so brown, isn't he?
Well, love, he's been out in those foreign parts for 2 years.
we know about poor Beryl, Tom. We're ever so sorry.
Yes.
Must be awful for you.
Oh, I'll just have to get used to it, Ma, that's all.
That Polish officer Beryl took up with Tommy, he wasn't a count, was he?
No, Ma. I never thought he was for a moment.
No.
Even when I got Beryl's letter. And there weren't any big family estates at some unpronounceable place near Warsaw. Funny how easy you can impress a girl, isn't it?
You must be starving. We were just about to have tea, weren't we?
Yes, take your coat off, son, and pull up a chair.
Now, Dad, that's a coincidence. Hmm? I got two pairs of kippers this morning.
Oh, yes.
Tom, you remember how you always loved a kipper for your tea when you were a lad?
Well, Tom, you've had a few days to make up your mind. How do you feel about it?
It's a very generous offer, Mr. Evans, but there are a number of things against it.
Hmm?
All things which are nothing to do with you or the company.
I see.
I dare say you know that my wife committed suicide.
I didn't know whether to mention it or not.
The salary is good, 900, but... Well, say I took over Mr. Holden's old office here, as you suggested.
Yes, Tom.
Unless I come to work each day by helicopter, well, I'd have to use the same streets I used to walk along with Beryl. The same passages, the same roads round the works.
Yes, I thought perhaps you'd feel this way.
Oh, don't think I'm not grateful, Mr. Evans. I am. It's a good job, and I'm a fool to turn it down. I realize that. But, well, there's no future, is there, working in a place that's going to send you right round the bend?
Oh. You're right, of course. No. How are you fixed for cash?
I've got a fair amount put by. I was saving up for furniture.
Yes. I see. So, what'll you do, Tom, with this new chapter of your life?
Mr. Evans, I'm headed back to the Middle East, to the Persian Gulf.
To do what?
Look, I've been to Abadan and Basra and Kuwait and as far down as Bahrain. There's no way of getting round that part of the world except by car or plane and...
I dare say travelling by car in that kind of territory isn't much fun, eh?
Nobody, as far as I know, is doing any air charter work out there. And I've got a hunch that if I went out there with a light aircraft, like, say, a fox moth, I might make a living.
Yes. Well, you could well be right. Well, a fox moth might be just the job. I was up in Leicester the other day at Kennington's.
Don't think I know them.
Oh, you ought to, Tom. Kennington's happened to have a fox moth going.
I knew this was going to be my day.
Dismantled, hasn't been used for years.
Well, that doesn't matter.
It needs a lot of work on it. Well, I dare say you could snap it up with a decent second-hand engine for 120, 130 quid.
Yes, I could manage that.
Good. Well, all I can do now is wish you luck. No, better than that. I can give you a letter to the managing director of Kennington's. He's an old friend of mine.
Hello there.
Good evening. My name's Tom Cutter.
Flight Lieutenant Allen. Welcome to Muharraq Island.
Thanks.
Come far?
East, please, Southampton.
Mate, how long did it take you?
8 days.
I say, that's a pretty good show in a kite like that. Going on to India?
I was thinking of staying here a bit, in case there was a bit of charter work to be picked up.
Oh, pity you weren't here yesterday, then.
Why's that?
Party of three engineers going down to Muscat. New water supply or something in the plumbing line.
Uh-huh.
Flew out from England by BOAC. Then this morning they took off in a chartered Arab dhow for Sharjah. 400 blinding miles. Shouldn't really care to do that in a dhow. Take them between 3 and 4 days.
How much further is it to Muscat?
250, I'd say. I think they were going to charter a truck from Sharjah to Muscat.
I see. Any fuel at Muscat?
Yes, and a strip. We keep a small party there.
Do you think I could get a telegram off to those chaps at Sharjah offering my fox for charter?
Well, the bods in the control tower are always nattering to their mates down in Sharjah. Dare say if you talk to them nicely, they'll bung your telegram over the RT. The land telegraph line's always going for Burton anyway. I tell you what, you've got to report to the control tower anyway. We'll wander down together. I'll introduce you to the bods there and we'll see what can be done.
My name's Harry Ford, Mr. Cutter, sales manager. This is Mr. Taverner, our secretary.
How do you do?
Mr. Taverner's seen your letter from Bahrain.
Yes, so let's get down to business.
For the last 6 months, I've been doing air charter work in the Persian Gulf with a fox moth.
You fly yourself?
I'm an engineer by rights, but I've been granted a provisional B license, which I have to renew every month.
Mm-hmm. Plenty of charter work?
Far too much for one aircraft. That's why I've come back to Britain to buy a second.
On credit, you said. And from us?
Yes, on credit from you.
What's the name of your company, Mr. Cutter?
I haven't got a company. Just a 15-year-old Arab boy called Tariq who cleans and washes the aircraft for 20 rupees a month. And a fox moth.
Just one fox moth?
Just one fox moth. And a walloping great profit. Here are my accounts, certified by the Iraqi accountant at Bahrain, together with a complete schedule of all jobs I've done, the hours flown on each, the payments, and all the rest of the gubbins.
I'll have a look at those.
You'll find them all in order, Mr. Taverner.
Yes, I dare say.
Your fox moth, I take it, is out of service in your absence?
Not at all. being flown by a chap I got to know recently called Gujar Singh. He's a Sikh, and a damn good type. He was in the Royal Indian Air Force during the war. Did 300 hours on hurricanes.
He's on your staff, too?
No, but he wants to come in with me. If, that is, I can get this Beijing air truck out of you.
On credit.
On credit.
Wish all our clients came to the point so quickly.
If we were to give you a hire purchase agreement, Mr. Cutter, over a year, say, could you find anyone to guarantee your payments?
Nope. I've got no rich friends. All I've got is the record in those papers there of what I can do. They show I can keep up my payments.
How much could you put down as a deposit?
£1,000.
Only 20% of the cost of the aircraft. From these profits, these accounts of yours show, you ought to be able to do better than that, Mr. Cutter.
I've got to keep some liquid capital in my business.
Even so, you can't pay off £4,000 in a year.
Why not? You can see there what I make with a single Fox Moth.
Yes, you've done well, no denying that. You've been doing all the work yourself so far. But if we let you have the air truck, you'll have to employ pilots and ground engineers, quite apart from having to insure our machine with a policy we approve of. You're going to have to start employing staff now, Mr. Cutter.
I agree. Do you know what I'm paying the Sikh who's flying the Fox Moth in my absence?
A pilot working from Bahrain, let's see, 1,000 to 1,200?
250 rupees a month.
How much is that?
£220 a year.
With flying pay?
Nope. Flat.
You propose this native pilot should fly the air truck?
Why not? Done 300 hours on hurricanes, most of it operational, without a single accident.
Oh, yes, but...
If this air truck of yours is so ready difficult to fly that he's not safe on it, then there's no point in continuing our discussion.
Easy, Mr. Cutter. Easy.
If the business grows, would you employ more than one native pilot?
Very probably. I can't afford British pilots at £1,000 a year.
But ground engineers for your maintenance?
I'm fully licensed as a ground engineer myself. By the time I need them, I'm pretty certain some Asiatics will turn up. I had some working under me in Egypt during the war. They were all right.
You're planning an air service staffed entirely by WOGs.
I prefer to call them Asiatics. If you want to sell me an air truck, you can quit calling my staff WOGs.
No offense meant, Mr. Carter. One uses these slang phrases. I apologize. The point you're making is that by using Asiatic staff, you can reduce your overheads to the point where you can bear the higher purchase cost of 80% of an air truck spread over a year.
Correct. I can pay off the aircraft and still make money.
Yes, I see.
Harry, I've been going through these figures of Mr. Cutter's very carefully indeed. Mm-hmm. He's a go-ahead young man I think we can afford to do business with. Mr. Cutter, £1,500 down and the machine's yours.
It's good of you to let me bunk in with you.
Not at all, Mr. Cutter. We had been warned to expect you. Now, don't expect too much. It's only a dormitory room with four beds. Batavia's full of the military, and the Netherlands hotel's packed like a sardine tin.
How's the war against the Indonesian Republicans going?
Slowly. Very slowly indeed. You said you were chartering down here.
Yes, I brought a young Dutch-American scientist down here in my air truck, and I've got a small return load waiting for me.
Now, this is your room.
Thanks.
I think perhaps it would be as well to go in quietly. This is a very hot place, and most of us take a siesta after the midday meal.
I'll be as quiet as a mouse.
I'll see you in the bar later.
Fine.
Who's that?
Oh, I'm terribly sorry to disturb you. I hope none of my gear's in your way.
Do you think you can do the girl in the Gretna Green show this evening?
Connie Shacklin.
Tom. You know, I couldn't believe my eyes for a moment. Tom Cutter.
But it's quite fantastic.
Well, tell me, look, what on earth are you doing down here? Are you still in aircraft?
You bet. I'm operating in the Persian Gulf. Got a Fox Moth and a new Beijing air truck. Came down here on a charter job. What about you?
Well, I was with Siamese Airways until a short time ago.
But I thought they only took Asiatics.
Well, what do you call me, Tom? My father was a full Chinese, my mother was Russian, I speak Cantonese and a little Mandarin.
And now that I'm out here, I spell my name as my father used to. In two words, Shaq Lin. I'm an Asiatic.
Not a proper one.
Well, proper enough to get a job with Siamese Airways.
But you said you'd left them.
Well, now I'm with Dwight Shafter.
Who's he?
Well, don't you know about him?
No.
Well, Dwight's a gun runner. He flies arms into the Indonesian Republicans, or he did. The Dutch have got him now, here in Batavia. He crashed in the jungle. He's in hospital, under guard.
And you work for this chap?
That's right.
Well, I'll be damned. But now the Dutch have got this chap under lock and key, what's your position?
Well, I paid the staff a month's wages out of the money Dwight left, and I've been given the safe conduct to proceed out of Dutch territory at will.
Then I've got a proposition to put to you.
All right, and I've got one for you. You first.
My show at Bahrain is growing. Come and work for me as chief engineer. I need somebody like you.
Well, I'm still working for Dwight Shafter. I've got a carrier of his to look after.
But the Dutch will put him in prison, surely.
Oh, yes, he'll go to prison. For years, probably. But he's got plenty of money. Money the authorities here can't touch. If he wants me to stay on and serve his interests while he's in prison, then I'll do so.
But why?
Because I like and respect the man. He's risked his life, his liberty, helped millions of Asiatics struggling for their freedom. Now that he has lost his own freedom, I can't very well abandon him, can I?
What about this Cornell carrier of his?
Shall I make my proposition now, Tom?
Shoot.
I think you should take over the carrier.
What?
Yep. Fly it to Bahrain and operate it there. The carrier is a real aeroplane.
But it costs more than 60,000, quite beyond my resources. Besides, what makes you think this chap Shafter wants to part with it?
Well, what else can he do? What he needs is someone who will fly it out of his area, preferably to British Empire territory, when the laws of property are clearly framed and easy to understand.
I'm not sure.
Well, if you took it over, I'd ask Dwight if I could go with the aircraft and work for you. You know, I think he'd agree to that. I think he'd want me to stay with his aeroplane.
Oh, it's 10 times heavier than anything I've ever flown before. What happens if I crash it?
I know this, Tom. You will fly that aircraft. And you will not crash it.
I don't mind having a stab at it, if nobody else minds.
They're easier to fly as they get bigger, provided you're not afraid of them. And you won't be afraid.
It's a long time since I've been afraid of an aeroplane. I thought you'd be in the prison hospital, Mr. Shafter.
I guess they wanted to keep me alive for the trial. Shaq Lin says you want to charter my Cornell carrier?
Well, it's going to cost me £600 in fuel, oil, and landing fees to even get it to my base at Bahrain. That'll have to be recovered out of profits before I can pay you anything at all.
Baloney. Fuel cost you nothing.
Huh?
There's over 12 tons of 100 octane in my store at Dam Ray Fong right now. You can fill her up, take 5 tons with you in the cabin. Oil there, too. The rest, chicken feed.
Not to me, I'm afraid.
Look, that carrier's worth $5,000 a month in charter fees.
Why don't you offer it to somebody like Pan American, then?
Huh? All right, wise guy, what's your angle?
I suggest this, Mr. Shafter, as an equitable deal in the circumstances. I'll take the carrier with any fuel and spares from Dam Ray with Connie Shacklin as my engineer.
Okay, Tom, that's a deal. Well, I wish some guy had given me a deal like that when I was young. I wouldn't have needed to go running guns.
It's fair enough.
Oh, maybe. All the same, you're a darn lucky guy. Say, you've known Shaq Lin quite a time, I believe.
We started off together as kids in the same flying circus.
Yeah? He's a fantastic engineer, that guy. One you can really trust. But he's got some mighty strange ideas for an engineer about religion, that kind of thing.
Does it affect his work?
Damn right it does. Makes his work a whole heap better.
I don't understand.
Down at Dam Ray Fong, this guy Shacklin's got a statue of a Buddha set up in a kind of little pagoda nearby where we parked the aircraft. He holds a kind of prayer meeting there twice a day before they start work on the machines and after they knock off in the evening.
Connie holds prayer meetings?
I'll say in Chinese, Siamese, something like that. The other engineers come to it, the local labor come to it, and the girls, they come too. Oh, yeah, your pal Shackling is quite a hot gospeler.
But is that sort of thing usual in this part of the world?
I've never seen it done before.
Connie started it then.
Well, must have done.
You know why?
I did ask him once. Notice that men work better if they pray. Just like an old preacher I knew back in Indiana when I was a kid. Now, maybe there's something in this religion business after all. I wouldn't know. I just never got around to giving it a whirl. Too darn busy flying.
You really think I know enough about this machine to take her up, Connie?
I'm certain you do.
We've come a long way since we used to tear about in that Ford in the Gretna Green display at Cobham Circus.
Yeah, those were good days.
Connie, all those people by your pagoda there, the engineers and the rest, they're all on their knees. They're not praying, are they?
Yes, they are.
For me, I take it, so that I don't make an almighty muck of this.
No, for us both. Probably more for me than for you.
Well, it's nice to know somebody cares.
Tom, we're at prayer. Perhaps you've come to join us.
Yes, if you'll have me.
Come forward, Tom. Will you kneel down?
Oh, yes, of course.
Oh, the laborer at your side, he wants to give you some of the gladiola blossoms he has in his hands.
Thank you.
It is written in the Dhammapada. You yourself must make the effort. Buddha can only indicate the way. Cut down the love of self as one cuts the lotus in the autumn. Give yourself to following the path of peace. Om Mani Padme Hum.
Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum.
Hello there, Tom. Another Jim.
Not for a moment, thanks, Jim.
Next one's on me, anyway. How's old Harpick getting on?
Who the hell's Harpick?
Your chief engineer.
You mean Shack Lynn? He's doing fine. Why do you call him Harpick?
He's clean round the bend, your mate.
He's a damn good engineer, I know that. Got all the other maintenance boys on the board.
I know. Nattering religion to them all the time.
Well, what of it? Do a few of you clods good if you thought about your so-called immortal souls for a bit.
Oh, come off it, Chum. You can't maintain aircraft with the Quran in one hand and a spanner in the other.
Well, he's doing it, isn't he? Who told you, anyway?
It's getting talked about all over town. The buzz is, if you want a drop of religion for one or other reason, you can listen to the imam in the mosque or pop along to old Harpick in the hangar.
Ah, do you a bit of good to do either. I'd bet my next charter fee you haven't been in a church of any kind since the last time you were marched there on church parade.
We are a peculiar people. We who work upon and care for aeroplanes. For common men, it is enough to pray 5 times in each day, as the imam dictates and as it is ordained in the Quran. But we are different, we engineers. We are called to a higher task than common men. And Allah will require much more from us than that. Have you got a 5/16 box there, Typhoon?
Yep, teacher.
Thanks. Now hold it firm. That's right, just like that. How many prayers did God first ordain were to be said every day?
50.
That is correct. I see that all of you do not know this, or you have forgotten it. And yet you, of all men, should know it.
Gurjas Singh?
Mr. Cutter.
How are things in the hangar?
Oh, they go very well.
I suppose all this religion is all right.
I think it's a very good thing, sir.
Flight Lieutenant Allen says Shacklin's being talked about in turn.
Yes. There is talk in the souk about him. You know that Shacklin is great friends with the Imam.
No, Gurja. I didn't know that.
Oh, they have long talks together frequently.
Look, Gurja, just what is Shacklin? A Muslim?
He is not a Muslim. At first, I thought he was a Buddhist. Now, I just don't know.
Today, I noticed you praying with him there before the Buddha. I thought you were a Sikh.
I noticed you there too, Mr. Cutter. And I thought you were a Christian. Perhaps Shacklin is just an ordinary man like you and I, who has the power to make men see the advantage of turning to God. No offense, Mr. Cutter, but you Westerners were not religious people, as we understand it in Asiatic countries.
No, perhaps we are not.
Few of you pray to God in public, or even in private, once a week. But God, and prayer to God, that is necessary to us. Shacklin understands this very well indeed. I think that in a year's time you may find that your ground engineers are as good as, well, perhaps even better than British engineers.
Yes, you may be right there.
If that happens, you will have a maintenance staff that is unique in all Asia, in more ways than one.
Sorry to send for you, Connie, when I know how busy you are.
There's some trouble, Tom?
Well, no trouble as yet. But I'm a bit worried about all these casual Arabs who drift in from Muharraq and even across the causeway from Bahrain for the sole purpose, it seems, of listening to you in the afternoon when you're saying your prayers. Now, for one thing, these chaps are a nuisance when our lot are working, and, well, we could have our tools stolen, you know.
Yes, I see.
We simply can't have all these spare bods round our aircraft.
No, I quite agree. I'll put up a notice in Arabic, and I'll string a rope across the mouth of the hangar.
Good man.
But I'm afraid they'll come just the same. You won't mind if they sit just outside the hangar, beyond the rope?
What do they come for?
They come to join in our prayers.
Well, I don't want any tools stolen.
Oh, they wouldn't do that, Tom.
Oh, says you.
No. They only come here to pray. They wouldn't steal anything from a mosque.
You mean they come to our hangar as a mosque?
In a way, yes. Tom?
Yes?
My mother died last week.
I'm terribly sorry about that, Connie. Terribly sorry indeed.
These things have to happen.
What about your sister? What's she doing?
She's a secretary with an American export firm.
What a pity it is you both have to live and work on opposite sides of the world. Look, if your sister would like to join us here, well, we can give her a tryout in the office.
Well, that's good of you, Tom. I don't really know if she'd fit in here. But I'll write and put it to her anyway.
Oh, this heat. God, what a day it's been.
It's been rather a strange day, Jim.
125 in the ruddy shade. Strange in what way?
I took a stroll down to the hangar late this afternoon.
Well, nothing very strange about that.
You know, we strung a rope across the entrance.
To keep fuzzy-wuzzy tea leaves out, yes, I know.
There was an enormous Hudson Saloon parked there.
Oh, the Sheikh Abdul Qadir drives a Hudson Saloon.
He was there.
Oh, you're kidding.
With his wazir, Hussein.
Yes, I know him.
Well, I didn't quite know what to do, so I wandered up, looked uncomfortable, and said, "This is a great honor, Mr. Hussein. The rope wasn't meant to keep you out."
And quick as a flash, he said...
Well, he introduced me to the Sheikh, and the old boy bowed low. To me, Tom Cutter. It was fantastic. I said to him, "So many people come here to listen to what Shacklin has to say to the engineers that we had to put this rope up, I'm afraid.
But if you wish to hear more, will you please come inside?
What did the old boy say to that?
Well, he mumbled something I couldn't make out. Then Hussein said, "The Sheikh wishes very greatly to hear the teacher, but he's rather deaf. It is very kind of you." So I lifted the rope for them, and they walked slowly and majestically into the hangar itself.
Well, blow me down.
I introduced them to Connie, and that was that.
Your Buddhist mate's really making a name for himself, isn't he?
Jim?
Yeah?
You remember I told you I was flying home to try to raise the money for another aircraft?
Oh, that second-hand tramp freighter, yeah.
I'll be taking off in a day or two. I'd like you to keep an eye on this business in the hangar for me.
Will do, Tom.
Oh, I don't mean put any restriction on Shacklin. I trust him. Just keep a weather eye open in case the whole thing starts getting out of hand.
Tom, what made you bring me up here today?
I used to cycle here weekends when I was a youngster and fish. Ah, I love Twyford. And I love this part of the river.
I came with you once.
Did you? For heaven's sake, so you did.
And I caught two more fish than you did.
Ah, that's what drove it from my memory. You've changed a bit since then, Doris.
Oh, didn't you expect me to? I'm 24, you know. You've changed as well.
Oh, I don't know.
Beryl changed you.
Yes, I suppose so.
That happened a long time ago, Tom.
Yes.
I don't know the rights or wrongs of it. But I do know this. There's nothing in that old story to force you to spend the rest of your life in the Persian Gulf. Away from everybody you know.
But I like working there.
I know why you went out there in the first place. You went to... find a sort of hermitage.
What a strange thing to say.
It's true, Tom.
Yes, perhaps it is.
Well, it's high time you came back into circulation. If you stay out there much longer, you'll go around the bend. You're laughing at me. You think it's silly.
No, Doris. You're right. You know, I've got a chap working for me at Bahrain now that everyone says is round the bend.
Now, what's wrong with him?
Well, he believes in God. He teaches engineers who work with him to turn to God in everything they do upon the aeroplanes. Oh, he's obviously going round the bend. Everybody says so.
But surely what he does, that's not wrong.
I don't know whether it's right or wrong. All I know is it's liable to raise a packet of trouble any time.
That's why you're so anxious to get back.
Yes. I managed to catch a lift out next week, but it's to Rangoon.
Rangoon?
Well, it happens to suit me splendidly. I've got some business to sort out there.
How long before you leave?
5 days.
I see.
You know, I really have enjoyed this afternoon. We must try and do it again before I leave.
I'm very glad indeed to see you, Mr. Cutter, but intrigued. I wonder what it was induced you to seek me out.
Well, Major Spencer, Father, my business in Rangoon is with an old friend called U Mayin. He told me an Englishman turned Buddhist monk was living in an ashram here and offered to bring me along.
I'm very glad he did. U Mayin is also a friend of mine, and he told me something.
Oh?
He said you have a man working for you in Bahrain. A most remarkable man.
He's my chief engineer. His name is Shacklin.
And he is remarkable?
To you, probably not. In England, I suppose people would say he was mad. All I say is that he's a first-class engineer who makes men reliable by injecting religion into their daily work.
Several people have talked to me about him.
What? Here in Rangoon, all this distance away.
Indeed, Mr. Cutter. He made a great impression on the monks in Bangkok. An Arab merchant from Aden came here to Rangoon last month and told one of my religious friends about the teaching that was going on in Bahrain.
Oh?
A Parsi from Karachi told us the same story. And then came U Mayin, who has actually been taught by this man. And now, you arrive.
I'll tell you anything I can, Father.
No, I have things to tell you. Every religion in the world requires to be refreshed from time to time by a new teacher. Gautama, Muhammad, Jesus, these are some of the great teachers of the past who have refreshed men's minds and by their lives and their example brought men back to truth. We are very far from the truth now. Far enough here, even farther in the West. Belsen and Buchenwald exceeded any horrors of the war here in the East.
Yes.
But we are all in this together, wandering far, far from the truth. This thing is beyond the power of ordinary men to put right. We must look for the new teacher. One day, the power that rules the universe will send us a new teacher who will lead us back to truth and help us to regain the way. There have been four Buddhas in the history of the world, of whom Gautama was the last. One day, a fifth will come to aid us, if we will attend to him. Here in Burma, we earnestly await his coming. For he is the hope of the world.
Do we know anything at all about this new teacher?
Indeed. We know that he is very near to us in time. We think he is already born. We think that his birthplace is in that part of the continent of Asia where Tibet and Russia and China meet. We think that he will be of mixed Eastern and Western stock. We believe this man is the savior of the world.
Do we know where this man is going to teach?
That has not been revealed. The only certain fact we know is that his ministry will last for 4 years and 23 days.
It is kind of you, Mr. Cutter, to come all this way to the souk to speak with us.
Shaq Lin said you wanted to see me, Mr. Hussein.
My master, the Sheikh of Kulal, was told by Shaq Lin that you have bought another large aeroplane.
A tram freighter? Yes.
Yes. My master believes you may have to resort to the usurers to find the money to pay for it.
Well, it's going to be difficult.
I do not wish to be impertinent, but my master asks me to suggest to you that he should lend you the money to pay for this airplane.
But the sum involved is 55,000 pounds.
Spare parts and auxiliary equipment will cost another 5,000 or so. Say 65,000 in all, about 8 lakhs of rupees. I do not think that will be beyond my master's resources.
But, Mr. Hussein, what I don't understand...
May God protect you, Mr. Khatta.
Well, Major Harewood, I'm sure you didn't come here to pass the time of day.
No. I understand you've been borrowing money from the Sheikh of Kulal.
That's right, though I fail to see what...
I happen to be the liaison officer here in Bahrain. Quite frankly, we don't care to see the sheikhs lending money to buy aeroplanes.
The loan wasn't my doing.
How did the sheikh know you needed money?
Perhaps my chief engineer told him I was expanding.
Shaq Lin?
That's his name.
He goes and talks some sort of bastard religion to the old man.
In his spare time.
Mr. Cutter, it's being suggested your chief engineer used his religious influence to get you a large loan of money.
I wonder who dreamt that one up. Now, let me tell you something. I could pay this loan back in a month from now. But I shan't do that. And you know why? Because you and your mates at the bloody residency have come to the conclusion that I'm a crook.
That's rather extreme language, isn't it?
The situation, to my mind, calls for extreme language. Good afternoon, Major. Come in. Hello, Arjan.
Shaq Lin has delegated a pleasant duty to me, Mr. Cutter, to introduce to you his sister. Her name is Nadezhda.
How do you do, Miss Shaq Lin?
Hello.
Oh, do sit down. Oh,
thanks.
My brother said that maybe you had a job for me here.
Can you take dictation at the rate I'm speaking now?
Surely, Mr. Cutter, I can take it quicker than that.
Any ideas about the wages I'd have to pay you?
Oh, well, I wouldn't know what people pay out here or what it costs to live.
I can't pay San Diego wages.
Oh, I guess that.
Tell you what I suggest. A bank cashier's wages here are 250 chips a month. I'll pay you that.
Okay.
If it doesn't work out, you come and tell me, Miss Shacklin.
All right, I'll do just that.
Now, I'll ask Ajah Singh to show you around my little airborne empire. Oh, and of course your brother will be able to fix you up with living quarters. How are you getting on, Miss Shacklin?
Mr. Cutter, I'd much rather you called me Nadezhda.
Right, Nadezhda it is. And I'm Tom.
Yes, I knew that. I like my job here.
You're a great help, particularly with the filing. That always killed me.
I like to see everything correct and properly entered up. It makes me feel good.
You're very like your brother. That's what he tells the chaps in the hangar.
Quite a few people around here seem to be taking an interest in what Connie says these days.
Practically every Asiatic ground engineer in the East seems to want to come and work here. Didn't you know this about Connie before you came here?
No. Oh, he was always a bit that way at home, but nobody ever listened to him. He didn't preach. He just had ideas.
We wouldn't pay any attention to them in England, I dare say. But they seem to fit in all right here.
Have you seen the way they treat him in the souk?
How do they?
Well, it's as though he were a prophet or something. They get up and do a kind of salaam as he walks by.
There's no harm in that.
But now they're beginning to do it to me.
You?
Yes, it's because I'm the sister of Shark Lin, the teacher. Oh, Mr. Cutter's office? Yes, Major Harrowett, he's here.
Cutter?
Major Harrowett?
Yes?
I'm afraid I have some unwelcome news for you, Mr. Cutter.
Let's have it, then.
It's about your man, Shark Lin. We feel at the residency that the influence he is building up is quite undesirable. That it could even be dangerous.
You scare me rigid.
It's very unwise to monkey about with religious feelings in this country. I've been here 25 years, and I know. A new sect creates a schism. And out here, schisms may erupt into open riots at any time.
There doesn't seem to me to be much harm in what he does.
That is for us to judge. Your man, Shark Lin, happens to be a British subject. And you're a British subject. I'm afraid in this matter, you will have to do what the resident decides.
Which is?
You'll have to get rid of him, Cutter. I'm very sorry about it, and so is the resident. But Shark Lin has got to go.
I asked you to come for a stroll, Connie, because...
They want to get rid of me, don't they?
How on earth did you know?
The imam told me, a couple of days ago. The bush telegraph works very well here in Bahrain, you know. Far better than the residency, no.
Those ruddy, pompous idiots. Oh, I can't think of a way out.
Now, look, Tom, we're friends. You mustn't let this trouble you. It's time that I went on, in any case. I've been here long enough.
I don't believe you meant to make a change.
I've done all I can in this place, and I should move on.
Look, why don't you go and start up in Bali for me?
Yes. Yes, I'll do that. A typhoon can go on here in my place.
Splendid. That's settled, then.
There's only one person damaged by this business.
Who's that?
You, Tom.
But nothing's happened to me.
Well, you were born a valiant and courageous man, and you can take hard blows. But you were going to sell this business, weren't you?
I did think of it, but I gave up the idea.
And with it you gave up England, and wealth, and an easy life in a beautiful country. And love, and the children you long for.
How did you know all this?
No, I haven't got second sight.
Well, it didn't seem to be a good idea to sell the business after all.
Did you, you hard-headed man, decide to stay on in this barren place as a penance?
I've got plenty to do penance for.
Well, when do you want me to go?
I'm laying on the first flight to Bali Thursday week. You and Finnett had better come with me on that. Oh, I'll take Arjun Singh, too, so he can learn the route. I think you ought to go with your brother, Nadezhda.
And he thinks I should stay with you.
I don't want to force you to stay here.
I want to stay, Tom.
Will there be trouble in the soup because Connie's been kicked out?
No. Not while he's here, but afterwards there may be. Some of them will miss him. Connie said to me today, if there should be any trouble, ask Tom to see that some fool of an officer doesn't close the aerodrome with an armed guard. The people may still want to come and pray.
I'll do what I can, but you know what stupid clods they are at the residency.
Tom.
Hmm?
If Connie got ill or anything like that in Bali, could I go to him?
Of course. We'll bung you on the first available aircraft.
Oh, that's all I wanted to know. Connie's way is spread a long, long distance from here. May spread even further. Engineers in the hangar in Rangoon worship in his way. And in Bangkok, in Karachi, and in Abadan.
What is this thing? A new religion?
As I see it, it's a way of life that brings men to worship through their work. Men who wouldn't worship in the old-fashioned way. Well, that's what a new religion is, and I suppose this is one.
Well, certainly there's no harm in it.
Oh, no, only good. Only a lot of good.
Right, Morrison, let's have it.
Well, sir, these last few days there have been far more worshippers at sunset prayers than ever before.
I know that.
Cutter's loaded up his tramp, and he and Jacqueline take off at dawn tomorrow.
And what happened there this evening?
There were 11 buses parked there.
11?
Some of them had made the journey more than once. There must have been 500 people there.
500? Good God.
Including the imam who led part of the service.
Any demonstration?
Oh, sir. No motion at all, just the prayers. Then they all queued up quietly and got into the buses.
That quiet. That lack of emotion. It doesn't seem right to me.
Oh, me, sir. I think we may be in for trouble of some sort, sir.
Karachi Tower, this is George Abel Nan Howe Victor from Bahrain. ETA 1150 Zebra, over.
Howe Victor, Karachi Tower, you are clear to enter the zone, over.
Karachi Tower, roger.
Howe Victor, Karachi Tower, is Mr. Shak Lin on board your aircraft?
Karachi Tower, roger. Shak Lin is on board.
Howe Victor, roger. Thank you, out.
Connie?
Yes.
Karachi Tower have just asked if you're on board. Are they expecting you?
Not that I know of.
Well, they obviously are.
Well, somebody must have got on the radio telephone from Bahrain.
I dare say that'll be it.
Hello there, Mr. Cotter. Did you have a good flight?
Yes, Salim, thank you. How goes it?
And very well, Mr. Cotter, sir, thank you. Mr. Cotter, is Shak Lin with you?
He's here all right. You want to see him?
Oh, yes. Many, many people here wish to see him.
Well, don't keep him too long. I want to go through to Ahmedabad today as soon as we've refueled.
May we have 1 hour, please? Only 1 hour. It is most important to us.
1 hour? Okay. Connie, I want to take off in an hour. Let's say 3 o'clock local time, shall we? And Salim here wants to see you.
My word, Mr. Cutter, your ground engineers have certainly started something.
I don't interfere with what they do, Harrison. If Asiatics like to say their prayers, I don't think we've any right to stop them.
Well, all going around the bend, if you ask me. Can't get a thing done up here until they've all said a ready prayer or two. Now it's starting in Bombay. I came in yesterday in a commuter. She was missing a bit on the front back, so I took her into Sindh Airways for a plug change.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was like being in a ruddy church.
Did they do the plug change, okay?
Well, yes, they did, as a matter of fact. And they found one or two cowling cracks that our lazy oafs down in Bombay hadn't even noticed.
Ah.
Oh, they're quite a good crowd in Sindhia ways, you know. If it wasn't for all this religious bunkum, I think they've come on quite a lot lately.
That's your answer, Harrison. I'm sorry about this crowd and all the rest of it, Maung Batu. As chief engineer of the airline, you must be pretty fed up. It seems to have stopped work a bit.
I allowed for it, Mr. Carter. We heard that Shaklin was to come through here 4 days ago, and so I arranged a holiday. We are treating today as a festival. It is a great honor. He is a very wonderful man.
All of you know that aeroplanes do not crash of themselves. You are intelligent men. You do not believe there is a jealous god who stretches out a peevish hand to take an aeroplane and hurl it to the ground. No. Aeroplanes come to grief because of wrong cravings and wrong hatreds and delusions in men's hearts. One of you may say, I have not got the key to the filler of the oil tank. I can't find it. I looked yesterday, and there was plenty of oil. It is probably all right today. So accidents are born. And pain, and suffering, and grief come to mankind because of the sloth of men.
May I come in, please, Mr. Carter?
Hello, Salim. Come in, of course. I'm just using Maung Batu's office to sort out my flight plan from Karachi back to Bahrain.
You delivered Shaklin safely in Bali?
Yes, Salim, very safely.
He has not come back with you?
No, he's staying there for a bit. He's looking after things for me there.
Mr. Carter.
What is it, Salim?
You have heard about the trouble in Bahrain.
What happened?
They say there has been fighting in the souk. Much trouble, very much trouble. It is because the teacher was sent away. An English officer was stoned in the souk.
What?
It was the English liaison officer from the residency.
Hereward?
I do not know his name. He was very badly hurt.
Oh,
he
no.
would have been killed, but the teacher's sister was there.
When did this happen?
8 days ago. The day you flew in here with the teacher.
Will he recover?
It is all right now. He is in hospital. The sister was there, and it was she alone who saved him.
How? I mean, what did she do?
When they stopped the English officer's car and dragged him out and began to stone him, the sister stood over his body and said to the crowd, "This is a bad thing, and the teacher will be very angry when he comes to hear of it." After that, no single stone was thrown. I think everything is quiet now. If there was still any trouble, we would have heard of it, because the radio operators talk to each other all the time.
You've seen Hereward in hospital then, Nadezhda?
He wanted to thank me. Oh, it was pathetic. I think he really thought he was preventing trouble when he sent Connie away.
You didn't get hit by any of the stones?
Well, they stopped throwing as soon as they saw me.
Oh, thank God for that.
There wasn't any danger. I knew that from the very beginning.
Like hell you did. That's why you were sick afterwards.
How did you know I was sick outside the hospital?
Salim told me in Karachi last night.
They know about that already in Karachi?
Uh-huh.
Do they know in Bombay, in Rangoon, in Bangkok, in Bangalore? Does every little thing we do here in Bahrain go halfway around the world?
Yes, I think it does.
A goldfish in a glass bowl has more privacy than we have. I can't even be sick without the whole of Asia knowing.
That's what comes of having Connie for a brother.
Yes. Oh, by the way, Tarek wonders if he can go to Bali to work under Connie.
Bahrain is Tarek's hometown.
He's writing up the gospel according to St. Tarek in a bunch of 5-cent exercise books. He's afraid there'll be a gap. Tom, please, stop it.
Nadezhda, that's the first time you've ever touched me. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm tired. I must pull myself together. No, I'm afraid Tarek can't go down to Bali. Connie's got Finet with him. This particular section will have to be the gospel according to St. Finet.
Tom, You're very, very tired. You must go home and rest.
Nadezhda, let me kiss you.
Tom.
It's good of you to see me at such short notice.
Look, Captain Morrison, now that you've taken over as liaison officer from Harewood, well, I was hoping things between the Residency and us might be different.
Yes, I sincerely hope they will be. You read Flecker, then? At the end of the day?
Sometimes.
I do, too. I see you've marked a couplet. Wonder if I know it.
And God shall make thy body pure and give thee knowledge to endure this ghost life's piercing phantom pain and bring thee out to life again.
Poet who knew about the people we're dealing with here.
Very much so.
Flecker would have understood, Jacqueline.
Perhaps.
What sort of person do you really think he is?
He's a very good chap.
A lot of people here think he's divine.
Oh, he's not. He's a very good ground engineer with a bee in his bonnet.
Did you know the RAF is going to expand here?
What?
I'm going to put a squadron on the aerodrome at last. The trouble is, you're occupying the only hangar.
They want to kick me up?
No, they want to build you a new civil aviation hangar and extend your present hangar across the vacant land to the south.
Hell, they can't possibly do that. They can't build over that bit. That's where the people come to pray.
It is RAF land.
It's holy ground. Honestly, Morrison, you'll have to put a stop to this business. If anyone stops the people coming here to pray, all hell will break loose.
Yet you don't believe Shacklin is divine.
I don't. But other people do.
Yes. You know, I agree with you. I don't think we can let the RAF do this. It's going to make a lot of difficulties, but they'll just have to bung up their hangar somewhere else.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Now, I'll tell you something. I think we're going to have to work on the assumption that Shacklin is divine.
Damn it, Morrison, I tell you he's not. He's just a damn good engineer who's going round the bend.
That wouldn't have been a bad description of the Prophet Muhammad. Only he happened to be a damn good merchant.
Mr. Qatar, this is Dr. Khaled. He is my master, the Sheikh's medical advisor.
Doctor?
He has something to tell you.
The Sheikh of Kulal is a very old man. He is dying.
I'm sorry to hear that.
He is very, very ill and ready to put down his burdens. But first, he wishes very much to see Shaklin, El Amin, the teacher, once again. To pray with him and receive his blessings before he lies down to die.
Well, Shacklin can come back here on the next aircraft from Bali.
My master would not ask so great a man to come halfway across the world to visit him. He wishes that you should fly him and some members of his household to El Amin, so that he may talk with him before he dies.
If that's what he wants, Wazir, I'd be only too happy to arrange it.
May God protect you.
Have you had enough to eat, Tom?
Oh, I'm full up to here, Connie. Ah. This girl of yours, Mari Yasmi, she certainly knows how to cook.
Yes, yet I was lucky to get her to work for me when I first came here.
She seems to pray a lot, as you'll be doing, I take it, when Gujar flies in tomorrow with the Sheikh of Kulal.
Yes. She has prayed a great deal since she was a little girl. When she was 4 years old, she chose the shrine to Shiva to pray at, and she has prayed to Shiva ever since.
And what does she pray for?
The usual things. For her mother, for her good health and long life, for her father, for a good rice crop. And because she's a girl, she prays for a man who'll give her love and respect and children.
I was afraid there might not be enough work for you here. You know, training and directing other people.
Tom, can't you believe I'm a normal man? That I like to draw my pay for doing nothing and be lazy?
It'd be too easy if you were like that.
Why do you think I'm not?
If you were, as you say, you'd be living with Marie Yasmi. I think you ought to settle down here, Connie. Marry Marie Yasmi and raise a family like an ordinary man.
Are you an ordinary man?
You mean I'm a fine one to talk?
Well, your marriage ended in tragedy, but is that any reason why you should not marry again?
I was talking about you and Marie Yasmi.
And I was talking about you.
I've started something and I've got to see it through.
Yes. Yes, I know it is the work which prevents. I think that you and I are very much alike. Both in our own way. Both in the same boat.
Both going round the bend, if you ask me.
Well, perhaps the road has a curve in it. Perhaps it is necessary to go round the bend a little before you can see clearly to the end. When you see Nadezhda, will you give her a message?
Of course.
Tell her that I should be very happy indeed if she were to marry you.
I can't tell her that.
I think you can.
Well, I might, in my own time, but not just yet.
Then tell her in your own time, Tom. But be sure you tell her. Be sure.
Had a good flight, Guja?
Normal enough, except for one thing.
Oh?
Well, with the Sheikh of Kulal on board, the most elaborate arrangements had been made for us at every stop.
No difficulties, then?
The difficulty was to prevent ourselves taking more passengers. You see, it is not possible to keep secret a journey that concerned Shaklin.
Here we go again.
At every stop, 10 or 15 engineers came up to me or the wazir, begging us to let them join us so that they might come here to listen to the teacher. We could have filled the aircraft 3 times over. It's the radio operators, of course. They're talking to each other day and night.
Tom, I think I'll call it a day.
You look pretty tired, Connie.
Well, it takes it out of you, talking to these people, you know.
The Sheikh, all of us, we'll be gone tomorrow.
Tom, you remember the first day the Sheikh's party arrived?
Yes.
And Dr. Khalid insisted on examining me?
Yes. As far as I know, he didn't find anything wrong.
He found something, all right.
What?
Oh, no, nothing you can put your finger on. But he's good, that chap. And cagey. He thinks something's wrong with me. But I couldn't make him tell me what it is.
I'll have a word with him.
No, he won't tell you. Not until he's certain.
I think it's time Nadezhda had a bit of a holiday and came down here to see you.
Yes, it would do her good to get away from the Gulf for a bit.
I'll fix it then.
Tom, you will give her my message.
In my own time, and when I think she wants to hear it. On the telephone, Dr. Khalid, you said you had grave news for me.
I drove out to the aerodrome to tell you at once, Mr. Cutter.
It concerns Shaklin?
Yes. I have received my report from Karachi. There it is.
Just tell me what it is, Doctor.
Shaklin has chronic myelogenous leukemia.
I have never heard of it.
It is a very bad disease.
And its treatment?
It needs X-rays to cure it, and many modern things not found in many cities in Asia. Shaklin should go to Europe. I can arrange treatment for him in Paris.
I see. What worries me is, will he go?
If you say he must, Mr. Cutter, I think he will agree. I am asked to tell you that my master, the Sheikh, wishes to spare no expense. This has been a great trouble to my master, this news of El Amin.
That's all Dr. Khaled told me, Nadezhda.
It's fatal, isn't it? He's going to die.
Oh, it's not as bad as that. But he'll have to go into hospital for treatment.
No, Tom. This is the end of it. There's no cure for this disease.
I can't believe that's true.
Well, it is. You'll see.
Look, Nadezhda, I think I'd better go down to Bali on the next trip. Connie's going to take some persuading.
Yes, I think so.
Will you come with me for the joyride?
Oh, dear Tom, you've never got used to having me around, have you?
I don't suppose I ever shall. It's a fresh wonder every time I come into this office to find you there.
All right. I'll come to Bali with you. We'll do what we can for Connie.
Hello, Arjun Singh. You're back early.
Had good tailwinds. I've brought you a letter, Mr. Cutter.
From?
The Dutch governor in Bali.
Here, let me have a look. Oh, no.
What is it, Tom?
Dear sir, it is with regret that I write to say the continued residence of your engineer, Jacques Lin, in Bali is no longer acceptable to the Royal Netherlands government of Indonesia.
Oh, no.
I must demand this man be removed very soon and replaced by another engineer with neutral religious associations, B. Hausman governor. Ah, that stupid clod. What's it all about, Arjun?
Two Dakota loads of pilgrims.
What?
3 days after you left, a Dakota flew into Bali from Bangkok. It had been chartered from the Thai Cambodian airline by 30 ground engineers from Don Muang.
To visit Shat Lin?
And pray with him. Then a second Dakota turned up with Indians from Allahabad and Calcutta.
Oh.
And I heard at Karachi that a third Dakota will be leaving soon, packed with pilgrims. Oh, you can't reason with these people. I told them it was forbidden to go, but they said Shak Lin, the teacher, is ill.
Who pays for all this? It must cost a bloody packet.
A Thai Cambodia provided the aircraft from Bangkok for only 100 rupees.
You're joking.
No. Each engineer had agreed first he would work 10 hours on the aircraft next month without pay. It is all over the East that Shak Lin is a dying man. I see it is the truth. And so, on all the aerodromes, engineers who work according to his teaching, but who have never seen him, such men desire more than any earthly thing that they should set eyes upon Shak Lin before he dies, and hear his voice, and receive his blessing upon their work. This is a thing that many men desire more than anything else in the world.
Is Shak Lin very upset at this new expulsion order?
Nothing can cause him to grieve. He is not like ordinary men.
Are you glad to be back in Bahrain, Connie?
Amazed, more than anything.
It was Captain Morrison's doing.
The officer who took Major Harrywood's place?
That's him. He reckons Harrywood made a stupid mistake and he's doing his best to make up for it.
We all make mistakes at times. Tom?
What is it, Connie?
Can you lend me one of your proctors for, a month or two?
Yes, of course. What do you want it for?
I'm going to die of this thing.
Oh, come on now.
Yes, they seem to think I've got less than a year, and I shan't be much good after the first 6 months. I'm content. Most of us don't get as much notice as that. Like you, Tom, I started something. Like you, I want to finish it. People who've never met me are beginning to put things down I've never said at all. Now, if I had a proctor, I could go around all these airfields and talk to the chaps.
If this thing is going to die out with me, it doesn't matter. But if it's going to endure, well, I'd like it to be right.
I understand.
I want them to see me not as a kind of god, but as a real man. A man who sweats as they do, who gets hungry and tired and sleepy. I want them to remember me as a first-class ground engineer, not as a preacher.
If you're going to visit all the airfields in the East where men are talking about you, it's going to take you all your time.
I want to go on till I have to stop.
Who's going to fly the Proctor?
Arjun Singh's offered to do that, if you'll give him leave without pay.
Whatever you say, Connie. Nadezhda.
Tom, where do you suppose Connie is at the moment?
Well, he's due in Agra tomorrow. Why?
Sheikh Abdel Qadir died this morning.
He was very old, my dear.
He left money for Connie to carry on his work.
Good for the old boy. How much?
Approximately £4 million.
You're out of your mind.
I saw Wazir Hussein in the souk. He told me.
For God's sake, this is fantasy.
Yes.
What about Fahad, the new sheikh?
Well, he's determined that his father's wish shall be carried out.
Oh, it's too fantastic to grasp. Well, I better grab a machine and catch up with Connie at Agra. Heaven only knows what he's going to think about this.
Tom, I've thought long and deeply about this gift.
And?
The Sheikh of Hulal was my friend. He left me this money to build temples. But my teaching has no need of temples. My temples are the fitter's shop, the tool, the hangar on the aerodrome.
I don't think the Sheikh meant this money only for temples.
I cannot take the money. Let there be schools and orphanages, yes. And let my name be on them, if you wish, as one who loves Sheikh Abdel Qadir. Let Baraka be a center for learning and security in the Persian Gulf so that no child from Abadan to Muscat shall need a home and not find one. And let there be a school for engineers where men can learn my calling and my way of life.
Teacher.
Yes, Guja?
Teacher, what you say is true, yet all other creeds have found a use for money. The power of money has been used to do good things in the name of Jesus, for example.
I hope you're not comparing me with Jesus.
I know it is not the same. He was a woodworker.
All right, Guja, you have it your own way. But Jesus didn't need 500 lakhs of rupees to spread his word. Great money is great power. And I shall die very soon. If I take this money, someone must administer it after me. Many evils spring from power, and power corrupts. All power corrupts. Either my words will last after me and be believed by men, or they will die. If one thing were required to kill them with certainty, it is that my words should be spread after my death by the power of money. I'm very tired. Tom, you don't know how grateful I am that you were able to bring me to Damrifong to die.
Don't talk like that.
What a long way you've come since Cobham Circus. You never thought you'd end up running an airline halfway across the world.
You never dreamt pilgrims would make their way to you from 5,000 miles away, to watch you talking to me, to pray beside your house.
It's funny the way things turn out. You know, they're saying in Rangoon that there is a new teacher.
I know.
And that his ministry will last for 4 years and 23 days.
Yes.
Well, when did I start teaching anybody anything? I don't even know myself. I haven't a clue.
When did you first come to Damrifong?
Well, I worked that out. 4 years and 3 weeks last Thursday. But I never taught anybody anything here.
So that one's wrong, too.
Chai Tai Fung was with you here at Dam Rai Fong in the beginning. He's one of the most devout of your followers.
Tom, you mustn't add to this legend. Try and put an end to this thing if you can. I want people to remember me as a good ground engineer, not as a legendary mystic who was round the bend.
I'll do my best. Now you must rest.
Tom, he looked so peaceful.
Darling, he was a peaceful man.
I didn't even have to see your face. I knew in the plane that Connie had gone.
He went into a coma and died just before dawn.
Yes, I knew. We were just coming in to land at Karachi.
I've arranged for the cremation to take place early tomorrow.
Yes. Poor Connie. And poor Tom.
I was prepared for him to die.
I didn't mean that. You know, Connie wanted us to marry one day.
He told me to tell you that.
Why didn't you?
I wanted to bide my time.
Well, it's bad luck on us, Tom. But I can't spoil it for all those people. I'm Connie's sister. If I married and had children like any other woman, well, it would detract from his memory. Maybe they'd begin to feel that Connie couldn't have been anything special after all.
But, darling...
No, Tom, I shall never marry anyone.
I don't think that's a very good idea.
It's what I'm going to do.
Where will you go?
Well, I'm going back to Penang, where I came from. I'm going to go to Mother Immaculate Mary to ask her if I can work in her orphanage for children. I think it's the best thing I can do. Poor Tom, you deserve a better deal than this.
May I come and see you there sometimes, Natasha?
Please don't do that. And please don't write to me. Oh, I'm so sad for you, my darling. You've worked so hard. So hard. You've been unselfish, as I didn't believe any Westerner could be unselfish. And all for what?
For what, my dearest? You mustn't make me out to be a martyr. I've been ignorant and blind many times in my life. But I've been given great privileges. Perhaps more so than any man alive today. For that I shall always be grateful. Nadezhda, you were Connie's sister, the sister of Jacqueline, the teacher. On the fields and farms of England, on the airstrips of the desert and the jungle, in the hangars of the Persian Gulf, on the tarmac of aerodromes in the southern islands, I have talked and walked with God.
In Round the Bend, Stephen Grenfell's adaptation of the novel by Neville Shute, Ronald Howard played Connie Shacklin, and Trader Faulkner played Tom Cutter. The rest of the cast was as follows. Nadezhda, Jane Jordan Rogers, Colonel Spencer, Carlton Hobbs, Beryl, Elizabeth Proud, Mrs. Cousins, Anna Burden, Albert Cousins, John Durf, Mrs. Cutter, Cecile Chevreau, Flight Lieutenant Allen, Douglas Hankin, Henry Ford, Basil Jones, Mr. Taverner, Kevin McHugh, Dwight Shafter, John Durf, Gujar Singh, Anthony Hall, Doris, Hilda Schroeder, Hussein, Gerard Green, Major Heriwood, Frederick Treves, Morrison, Kevin McHugh, Salim, Preston Lockwood, Dr. Khaled, Roger Snowden, Arjan Singh, Nigel Anthony. The play, which was recorded, was produced by Betty Davies.